You're listening to Asheville FM at WSFM LP 103.3 Asheville. This is News Team Correspondent, and I'm joined in the studio with David Forbes of the Asheville Blade. David, as always, thanks so much for joining.
Always a pleasure.
And David, you know, we've been doing this for a couple years, maybe even 3 years, and I can't remember a time in which there has been quite the feeling of distraughtness, quite the feeling that a lot of the work and a lot of the efforts and a lot of the community that we really strive for isn't really reflective with what we're seeing with those who are elected here on the city level.
And people are incredibly outraged, and they have every right to be.
Yeah. And you know, this is going to be a really hard one to unpack. And we are going to talk about the Tuesday, July 25th city council meeting. But I don't really think we need to kind of beat around the bush. I say we just dive immediately into it in terms of all the things that we really need to unpack. And the context is that there was a vote for turning the Flatiron building into a hotel.
Into a luxury hotel.
Into a luxury hotel. But, you know, I'd be remiss not to mention that this was after the fact that this was brought before council. Back in May, there was not an up-down vote, and this was able to come back onto the floor, and people were able to vote on this. And it was a 4-3 vote. David, what the heck is going on?
So, it's worth laying this out, because this is a interesting and complicated tale. But it's also really simple. It's also, you know, as sometimes when people talk about, like, the nuances of gentrification or policy, I have to remind them there's nothing nuanced about an eviction notice. You know, there's nothing nuanced about police brutality, for example.
About, like, poverty. Yeah. About, you know, displacement.
Yeah. There's nothing nuanced. There's nothing nuanced about hunger.
Yeah.
And there's nothing nuanced about, there's, you know, there's certainly different aspects to it. But, you know, these things are blunt and brutal to the vast majority of the city in one aspect or another, to one degree
or
another.
Those are more oppressed.
Yeah. And at this point, you know, most of the city is at, to some level, and to very different levels, but is facing, you know, some sort of damage or danger from gentrification. It is getting viciously worse. So the Flatiron Hotel seemed like a flashpoint. I've heard the council member, Julie Mayfield, who ended up shifting her vote on this, is kind of the heart of a lot of the problems here, refer to it as, you know, people's anger about it is because it was symbolic. But there's nothing symbolic about 71 local organizations and businesses, many of them were people who are, you know, pretty pretty working class, really trying to just kind of make ends meet, getting kicked out. I think that was highlighted. Our coverage, for example, article called Thickest Thieves, that kind of lay out some of the problems of this the day before the council meeting, actually talked to a tenant who finally was willing to come forward and say, no, look, most of the tenants oppose this. We don't want this. This is devastating to us. So rents have been vindictively hiked after it didn't pass the first time.
Right.
So it's kind of the setting here. So this has been wending its way through the city's process since about last year. And it was hated from the beginning. You saw the very first part of the city's process was called developer, meaning the developer lays something out. Usually just a few property owners show up. You had like 50, 60 people turn out about the Flatiron Hotel. And they were outraged. People were like, we absolutely do not want this. We hate this. Don't do it. And it kind of ground its way through the process. You know, it passed by one vote. It, you know, was recommended by the Planning and Zoning Committee. And then it made its way to council in May. Initially, it was not rejected, very importantly, which allowed it to be brought back. If it had been rejected outright, they couldn't have brought the same post back for a year. They would have had to do some
And with, like, immense holes. And I want to talk about, like, the zero parking that is going to be afforded. The folks that are going to get pushed out who utilize that space. The hike in, like, rent increases for everyone nearby. Like, massive holes in terms of, like, what has been, like, the acceptance of hotels, more or less.
So this is actually – so hotels are already widely hated. They are Asheville's most hated industry. You know, maybe Airbnbs, which I think a lot of people rightly see as just another aspect of the hotel industry. You know, they take up public space. You know, I think as we summed it up years ago when this kind of backlash really started, understandable backlash hotels in the Blade, you know, these are places built for people that don't live here that pay locals crud and run by to the profit of people who actively want most of the local population driven out or hold them in contempt. That definitely came up in this process too. So it's worth noting the city is not just, you know, saying, hey, go ahead and build this hotel. They are actually bending over backwards for this hotel. They are breaking their own rules on multiple fronts and giving exceptions to those rules. Generally, the rules say, okay, a hotelier has to build, like, parking nearby or secure parking very nearby. In this case, they're getting parking from the public decks. You know, they're paying the city for that. The city doesn't have to let them do that. No. And so the city is giving them this exception to the parking. They're letting them take up public space. The public sidewalk part of that is going to become a loading zone and a drop-off
zone. Good thing
we
have tons of parking downtown,
and,
right?
And sidewalks are in great shape. It's not like we don't have some of the highest fatality rates for pedestrians in the state. Yeah, so this is literally putting people at risk by driving 71 kind of local organizations and businesses from some of the last, like, non-gentry space in Asheville out. It's going to increase rents a lot of other places. And displaces a lot of people. A lot of people are being put in desperate circumstances over this. So after May, after it was clear this was not going to advance forward immediately and was going to have to kind of be brought back, you saw some other stuff happen. The day after, one of the main owners of the building, Russell Thomas, raised rents massively, like almost doubled them on a lot of tenants, especially a lot of the more working class tenants. We came with a little vindictive note of, like, we're doing this to the lack of community support. Basically, you don't give me my way, I'm going to, you know, try to drive you out. And, you know, I talked to in the article The Blade did, we talked to a tenant who said, look, like, yeah, like, most of the mentality, you know, some of the tenants had been, you know, kind of put out there by the developers being in favor and okay with this change. They're getting help to relocate and everything. But according to the tenant we talked to, Kat Cordellucci, been there for 13 years, she said, no, most of us are not in favor of this, especially kind of the more working class people who are, you know, renting space, really just trying to get by as the last affordable space in downtown. So this is going to have a massive effect, and the city bent over backwards. The fact this came back so quickly, that is almost unheard of.
Yeah.
They even made an exception. Generally, council members have to be in the chamber in person to attend and vote. Council, again, the people who opposed the hotel voted for this too. They didn't have to. They actually, if all three of them had been against it, it wouldn't have passed. Mm-hmm. They gave an exception to Mayor Esther Mannheimer, who had been pretty in favor of the hotel, to attend and vote by phone.
Dang.
Indeed.
Yeah. I'm just, like, listening to you, David, and, you know, it's so much to unpack here because we are talking about, like, a culture, right? We're talking about, like, what is the very, like, human nature and fabric of the city. And I want to kind of pivot just a little bit. And one of the things that we kind of talked about before we came on air is how in many ways, like, we almost as a city kind of hold up and perpetuate a lot of these inequities. And sometimes we don't even see them through our own implicitness. And I think through, you know, what is the nonprofit industrial complex here, the ways in which, like, we have a lot of really, like, do-gooders, and you have this kind of false sense of, like, liberalism that exists here, which is why it becomes so easy for the folks who currently are on council and who are in these positions to make decisions for, you know, much of the community, is that there's not a lot of pressure because, like, we've created this climate of, like, cool, you're a CEO of this, like, really nice nonprofit. You do good work. But, like, what is your accountability to the community that you serve? And what does it look like of you who are in a position of power that oversees this nonprofit and you're making a decision for the community that's going to impact people who are not in your sphere of influence, right? Like 0%.
Yeah. So, and that's actually interesting because the council member at the heart of all this, whose vote, you know, who changed all this, council member Mayfield, kind of is emblematic of those issues. She's the head of a major nonprofit, Mountain True.
Which an environmental justice.
Ostensibly, yes. At the same time, a lot of her work, especially in recent years, has mostly consisted of wanting the public institutions to partner closer with Duke Energy, who are coal barons. Like, let's not forget, you know, who are literally named in union songs as, like, the people whose power was based in, like, crushing unions and destroying, like, environments, especially in Appalachia. So, and also, in her role on council, especially when it comes to other nonprofits, she's been repeatedly criticized by groups doing work on the ground in marginalized communities for, bluntly, a very condescending attitude, especially to nonprofits run by people of color, especially when they're run by black women. Mm-hmm. And this has all happened publicly. So, you know, it's do good work, but if that work's cozying up to coal barons and condescending lecturing activists and black women, like, that's not work. That's just another aspect of the same system. So it doesn't really come as a surprise when she changes her vote. And it was you know, we were talking about the kind of the bizarre nature to all of this, and it was bizarre, like, somebody who watches politics here, it was almost like she was reading from a script, saying, oh, well, the developers have reached out to opponents, even though opponents were literally shouting, no, they haven't. No, they didn't. We weren't consulted at all on this. And, you know, that just had to be done. It's the only way. Just taking their things hook, line, and sinker. And it brings back something that I've said before, but I think bears repeating, especially as Ashevillians kind of look around for why this all went through despite so much public opposition. Mm-hmm. And why people are sensibly progressive and liberal are not just for this, but aggressively for this. And it's as something that someone who's been in these trenches a long time told me a while back. This is someone who especially has fought, you know, for rights for trans and gender nonconforming people. Said, never forget that conservatives want to kill you and liberals want you to die quietly. And if there was ever a city that was emblematic of that, it's Asheville. The overwhelming focus is don't get angry. You know, don't do anything. Don't fight back in any way. We're not going to, you know, we're going to shut off the processes that essentially are supposed to, you know, have some opportunity for people to exercise their voice. We're going to make them as meaningless as possible. We'll vote the way we want. Stop asking us questions. And that's what you see here. It is kind of this culture of silence, and it's permeated a lot of the city. And interestingly, I think what you're seeing is that's really – it's been breaking for a while on a lot of different fronts. Mm-hmm. But definitely this is another moment in that. Within less than 24 hours, flyers had gone up around the city saying, look, we don't want any more hotels, luxury apartments, none. And if you keep interfering with our lives, we'll interfere with your businesses. We'll interfere with your hotels. And as you can just see kind of centrist Asheville, liberal Asheville – because this is, at the end of the day, a very left-leaning city. The political culture at the top in City Hall is not very left-leaning. It's almost even right-wing in a lot mm-hmm. of ways. But the culture of the people on the ground here is very much, much more left-leaning. It's one of the sources of this tension, this anger.
Oh, for sure.
Is that, you know, they keep passing right-wing budgets and right-wing, you know, measures in a left-wing city, or left-leaning city at the very least. And it's interesting to see that even a lot of people who've, you know, been longtime activists who've really tried to work the city processes were saying, yeah, this does not surprise me. This is totally inevitable and even laudable. And you were seeing some kind of this more status quo end of people in the city lose it over this very basic activist statement.
Yeah.
You know, saying it was a violence or a threat. There's a very basic statement of, you know, of hey, there's going to, you know, going to be direct action. People have a right to act back when they are literally being driven out of their homes, when their lives are missed, when they're being paid terribly, when they're seeing their friends and communities get displaced, get shoved out, frankly. There's been more a few days later, they practically reached for the smelling salts over some of the same people about another flyer that went around with, you know, a guillotine over the Flatiron building, the names of the four council members that voted for it, and said, you know, next city council election.
Yeah.
Which is just very basic, like, look, we can unmake you. We can kick you out of office. We are not going to forget this. And so, again, I say this sometimes, and it's interesting I have to repeat this so much, but I think there's a lot of people out there in the city, especially people with the more privilege and that don't still believe it. You know, we've been criticized the Blade for being, you know, too angry or too vitriolic, and I think anger is actually totally justified, and the only forces when it's organized and applied properly that gets anything done. I think the people's anger here is beyond justified at this point. But the most angry, most vitriolic pieces we've ever published are a fraction of a fraction of a fraction of the rage I see every day.
Mm-hmm.
And what you're seeing now is that people are incredibly angry. They have been shown they have no recourse through local government. And that was always tenuous at best. These systems are really not set up
for sure
for the public to actually have a voice. They're,
But
what little avenue there was that, you know, people have kind of forced open over the years, they're intent on shutting off. And so people are angry, and I think this is just the beginning.
Yeah. Well, David,
I know
we could certainly keep going, but that, you know, is our city council report talking about the July 25th meeting, in which, you know, if you haven't heard yet, there was a decision to approve the Flatiron building turning into a luxury hotel. And this is not the last of it when it comes to really contentious decisions, both on the hotel front, but also we have a massive districting case around around gerrymandering that is going to be taking place around a work session. And you and I will...
Took place around a work
session. Yeah, and we'll be talking about that next time. And for I know that you've been cranking out a lot of pieces. I've just been devouring them. So thank you for all that you do. Yeah. But for listeners out there who want to read more about some of the things that you and I are kind of unpacking right now, where can they go?
Ashevilleblade.com.
Well, David, thank you as always for joining for another edition of the City Council Report.
Always a pleasure.